we're on here now.
Refresh, I suppose.
Yeah, because you probably have to listen
yes,
to.
Yes, live. And now I can join.
Ah, that's what it was. There we go. We've got to turn it on. You know.
Have you tried to take it off? Yeah. Okay, cool.
Okay, hopefully it'll work.
Do you want to start it again, or can you edit it down from the live?
Yeah, I can edit it down from the live. It should be fine.
Okay, I'll shut down WhatsApp. Speak to you on the
Okay, excellent. Hey, I'd like to come in.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hey! Can you hear me?
Ah, I can hear you. I can
Hooray!
Hear you.
Amazing. Fantastic. The technology has come together. We actually talked to each other in 2019 in the UK. And despite me giving you all that grief about your headphones, it turns out it was my headphones.
I know. It's like trying to get from like Earth to Mars or something. We're talking to people on the moon or something, you know.
Exactly. It's like the dark side of the moon, mind you. It is rural Northumberland, to be fair. So, it's probably got better broadband in the sea of tranquility.
Well, I've got a wired line here, so it should be good. It should be good. But to all our listeners... To all our listeners, you are listening to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show. We thank you very much for coming back to us, because we know we had a few technical difficulties earlier on, but now we are set and ready for a fantastic show. And of course, my guest tonight is none other than Jonathan Sutherland.
Hello, thank you.
My there we
goodness,
go.
I never heard of a round of applause like that before. Until I finished my speech at your wedding, yeah. Well, and that wasn't because the speech was good, it's because they're pleased I was finished.
Well, if it goes really badly, you might get a reaction just like this.
Oh. The tumbleweed is going past. Exactly.
Yes.
No expense spared on the sound effects there, Hugh. That's very impressive. Yeah.
It's whatever a standard Podbean non-payment membership gets you these days. But
That's when you pay 50 beans a year or whatever it is, then that's what you get. Yeah.
Yes. But to all our listeners, feel free to give us a comment. Ask us some questions and we'll do our best to answer them. And tonight, it's all about cars and our crazy motoring stories. And of course, we're going to start by our first cars, because normally when you're buying your first car when you're 17 or 18 and you've just got your driving license, that's when the adventure begins. What was your kind of first car, Jonathan, for our listeners? What was your first experience
of driving? The first car that I bought with my own money, you mean?
Yeah.
It was a Porsche. Actually, that's not quite true. The first car I bought with my own money, because I always used to use farm cars, you know, that was hanging around the farm. Yeah. I was usually troopers, and we had a couple of BMW Tourings that used to be around the place. But yeah, the first car that I actually bought with my own money was a Subaru Impreza in Michigan. I bought it from Grand Rapids Subaru, and only later on did someone point out to me that perhaps the best car to have in the Motor City around about 50 miles from Detroit was not a Japanese-built hatchback, because the looks that I used to get driving through Detroit were not good. I can tell you that. Not good.
Oh, of course. Yes, exactly, because that's the thing, isn't it? It would have been, you know, it's Motor City, so you can't be driving something that's from Japan into that.
Well, that's exactly what we did, and we took it, in fact, to the Kobe Center, I think it was called, which is where the Detroit Motor Show was, and we went to the Detroit Motor Show in 2001, they would have been. We drove to Detroit, and I'll tell you something, we were driving through the suburbs of Detroit, and I needed fuel for the car, and my goodness, I was not looking forward to breaking down just beyond 8 Mile in the roughest part of Detroit. So, yeah, just a little tip to any listeners out there, if you're going to go to America and Detroit. Don't buy a Japanese car when they've all just been put out of business after the dot-com crash.
Ah, well, there's lots of things happening over there just now, because quite a lot of the American companies are really struggling. Although the amazing thing is Fiat-Chrysler merger has actually done quite well, and Fiat are making quite a bit of money off their American market, but a lot of the other ones are struggling, which is, I never thought, you know, a merger between Fiat and Chrysler could be a good thing. But when you think, you know, kind of American build quality and along with Fiat unreliability, and you've got...
exactly. Chrysler build quality with Italian financial.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, maybe not. But yeah, Fiat Chrysler have just taken over, was it Peugeot Citroën or something?
Well, they want to do a merger. And yeah, I think it's in the process of being approved. Which it really could be something, I think, because, I mean, you know, it's massive. And to be fair, Peugeot Citroën cars have really improved. They have dramatically improved them over the last few years, because they were pretty dull and boring and really not anything to write home about. But in the last few years, they have brought out a lot of new models and have really kind of recaptured the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. They, I mean, some of the cars that they're producing, the dark years of the Peugeot 407 and the 207, they were just terrible cars, weren't they? They're literally peculiar looks of them. But now, having driven the cars down at Millbrook last summer, most of them are actually pretty good.
Yeah, very stylish, unique interiors, really kind of up to the latest technology as well. I mean, they look like you're getting into something that's really actually quite premium. I think the new Peugeot 208, it looks stunning, actually. Top of the range models look amazing. I can't wait to get a go in that, actually, because that does look like a very good car. But it's funny, isn't it? Because manufacturers have their time, and they have times when they're really strong and then they're really bad. And it's kind of, it really does vary. And it's like, you know, so you try and name a manufacturer that's got a really good lineup overall, it's quite difficult. I mean, you can see, obviously, BMW and Mercedes have a pretty strong lineup. But, you know,
they've got some weird looking cars, though, BMW, something like the X4, I never quite got around that. And these new 2 Series coupes and things. No. Not good. Not good, as Donald would say.
No, it's quite something. I mean, I remember things like the Peugeot 307, that was pretty dull. But if we've got any American listeners, and we usually do, we would love to hear from you, because America, my goodness, I feel for you. Something, you know, when you see and hear stories of Americans buying their first car, and they pay like $2,000-$3,000 for an old, you know, an old Proton or something, or an old Honda Civic that's about 20 years old. It's like you couldn't do that in Britain in terms of, you know, if you wanted a 20-year-old Honda Civic, you'd pay about 100 quid at an auction. It literally would be worth nothing. But in America, car prices are quite high, even for stuff that you would think is absolutely finished. It's like, you know, a couple of $1,000. I mean, obviously, you've had experience of buying cars in America, but it is quite incredible that people will pay that kind of money, or that, you know, that's where the market is over there.
I was always amazed how much it was, because some of the people, my colleagues over there, bought some absolute clunkers. And, you know, you were talking £2,000 to £3,000 for, I remember one guy bought a Saab 9000, and I think he paid $3,000 for it. And the thing had done, I think, 290,000 miles. I mean, it was absolutely finished. If that had gone under the hammer in the UK, it would have been, what, 600 quid max. And it was sitting at $3,000. But of course, there was no MOT in America. Whether that's the case these days, I don't know. So as long as a car was running, then it was always worth something. And some of the machines you'd see driving around were extraordinary, especially like a chassis with wheels. You know, and all the bodywork had just gone. You know, something else, it really was. But I had some interesting test drives over there. I remember having a test drive in a Ford Escort, I think it was. And it was a 3-speed automatic, and boy, it was awful. It really was an absolutely terrible car.
It is something else, isn't it, when you see these cars on the road? Maybe perhaps we should buy some old scrappers over in Britain and ship them across to the United States and see how much money they'll get. And although I don't know how they'll take to driving a right-hand drive car. But because even in European markets, like in Spain, you wouldn't pay that much. You know, a few hundred euros for an old clunker. And then that's the thing. And you think emissions-wise, if it's a petrol, it's probably going to be reasonable, you know, because, you know, it shouldn't be smoking or things like that. But in America, you do see cars that are quite different You know, they're not. They're, you know, they do pump out the smoke and things like that, and nobody seems to really bother about it.
No, well, I mean, I mean, blue smoke abounds. You know, there's no doubt about it over there. Whereas over here, unless it's owned by the government, like a taxi or a bus, or either owned or licensed by the government, then I think cars are pretty clean over here now. It's just owned by the council, basically.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, with their green credentials, they're the only things that are actually doing the pollution at the minute. So, something else. So, Hugh, what was your first car? What was that? It wasn't a Subaru Impreza?
No, or a Porsche, or anything like that. It was it was a 1986 Ford Fiesta 1.1L with about 50 horsepower, something like that. But I bought it from your garage that you were working at the time for £500.
I was going to say, who on earth would sell you something like that?
Only someone who had no morals at all. You know what I mean? Like,
that was the first car I ever sold. That's
bought it. Yes, I did. Yes, and
I remember driving it back from the station at Almouth, quite near where I was working, and I thought actually the engine and the gearbox were incredibly slick.
It was just a little bit
of rust on the offside panel, front wing. But apart from that, the car, the interior was kind of as new almost. It was absolutely
incredible. It was actually quite clean, wasn't it? And to any American viewers or US or kind of South American viewers, listeners as well, we used to use this thing. It was a product from Amway, which was a kind of fuel additive. And my goodness, it really cleaned out the car. So I used to get incredible fuel consumption and performance. The engine used to run really, really well. I remember taking it for services, and they said, look, we hardly need to change the spark plugs or anything. These things are incredible how well it runs. It was quite a machine back in the day when it cost only £15 to fill it up with fuel.
Goodness me.
Yeah, when fuel was about 55p a litre or thereabouts.
Yeah, and now it's rather a lot more. Days, my goodness. Mind you, that's still quite expensive in the US. Yeah, I don't know what it is in the US, what is it? Like $3 a gallon or something?
So yeah, something like that.
Probably is about 55p a litre. Yeah.
What
it is in the US right now. It's incredible. But at least it did better fuel economy than your VW Polo 1 litre, which had a hole in the fuel tank around about 3/4 of the way up the tank. So
that was such a bad car. That almost put me off driving.
Oh, I don't know why you bought that. That was your low point. But you see, unlike you, you started with your bad cars. What I've done is I started with really nice ones and mine have got worse. I started off with really nice cars and then I got a Suzuki Jimny and a VW Up.
Yes, that thing, you've still got an Up, haven't you? But I suppose it's quite a good little town car when you're running around town and leaving it in places, things like that. So it is it's handy and it's cheap to run. I can't say awful lot for the Jimny,
was phenomenal.
I saw a new one of those today, actually, in the Sainsbury's car park. It was a brand new 69-plate Suzuki Jimny. And I thought, my goodness, someone's paid about £25,000 for that.
They probably have. They are seriously about £20,000.
Yeah, which is incredible.
Just lunacy, really, isn't it? I mean, why you buy that? Because, they look cheap. I mean, they obviously churn those out at, £5,000 or £6,000 a unit and charging £20,000 for them. Absolutely extraordinary. I still like the vehicle, though, but the old ones were the best when they used to sell them for about $9,999.
That's right.
Brand new out the showroom. Then they were quite good value, but now you can't get anything for that.
Yeah, and yeah, as you say, it can't cost much to make the thing. I mean, it must be pretty cheap overall.
When you look at the new Jimny, have you had a go in the new Jimny?
No. I haven't.
they drive okay. I mean, they're a little bit better than the old previous one. But then they really ought to be quite a lot better, I would have thought. But when you look around it, you see the quality of the build and... Well, not so much the build, it's put together well enough, but it's just cheap. You know, the materials are not expensive. They've kind of got the interior from the old Suzuki SJ, was it 310 or whatever it was, from the late 80s and early 90s. So it's really, it's all a matter of perspective. It's a matter of expectations, Hugh. You know, you're not going to get around the George complex, you know, or down the straights at high speed in a Jimny, but if you just want to poodle around, holding everybody up, slightly in danger of your life, then, you know, drive a Jimny.
Actually, the funny thing was, I saw today what I thought was a classic car, right? You know, like something out of the 30s or the 40s when it was farther away. And then as it came closer, it was a blooming Citroen 2CV. And it just shows you exactly. Goodness. Yeah, but I mean, for me, I thought, my goodness, is that an old classic? I mean, it is, in a way, a kind of classic. But when we actually got closer to it, of course, it was an old black and kind of purple. You know, they had that Citroen that it was a kind of, one of the special editions. You know, they had countless ones.
Charleston.
Now, that's only something that James May would be able to compete with, I think. But in terms of...
Fairly tragic kitchen knowledge, that.
Yeah. but it just shows you how old, because, I mean, that car must have been designed probably in the 50s or the 60s. It was around a long time.
I think it was 50s. I think it was more or less after the war. It might have even been designed in the 40s, but certainly the 50s. And it really links back. I mean, I remember... those were being produced right back to about 1990, weren't they?
Yeah.
The last
one
was made, in fact.
They were pretty cheap. I mean, they were literally, I don't know, $5,000 or $6,000, if that. They were not.
I think now they probably the standards that got them in the end, because I mean, they were absolutely appalling. It was introduced in 1948, just doing a little bit of knowledge. 1948, and the last one was produced in 1990. I mean,
good. 40 years plus, isn't it? 42 years worth of cars.
42 years. Yeah. And it didn't change it at all.
So for our listeners, we've got a number of live listeners here in this evening. You're listening to the Car Sim and Race Driver Show. Let us know. Write a comment here or send us an email at podcast@cardioadvisor.co.uk and we'll do our best to mention it. It's great to hear what people's first cars were, because, I mean, there's such an amazing stock to choose from, isn't it, when you're going worldwide. Think of all the bad cars that normally people have to get when they're 17, and then literally it's the first thing they can afford, and the freedom they get when they get behind the wheel, and the first drive when you've got your license. Do you remember driving the first time when your parents weren't in the car with you, when you got your license and you were allowed to actually take the car out and have a go? What was it like? Because it's quite a special feeling, really, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yeah. You know what? I can't even remember when it was. Well, obviously, it was the day after I passed my test, so it'd be the 20th of July, 1993. But, yeah, it was just an amazing experience. I mean, I remember going so carefully the first time. I just couldn't believe I was allowed to do this. I'd dreamed of it for years, just literally dreamed of it. So I was almost counting down the days until my 17th birthday when I could drive. And as you said, it's just the amazing sense of freedom that you had with a car. And you know what, Hugh? I still get that sense of freedom anytime I get in a car. I just love cars. I like basic cars. You know, I've had some quite nice cars, but almost the ones that are closest to are the real basic ones. And it doesn't really matter if it's a rental car that's some old sort of Fiat Uno rental car from, you know, the 1990s. You just get in it and you've got this new country and you're just off and you're free to explore Spain or Thailand or America, wherever you go, you are just out there exploring. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, it's funny because my last car, I mean, everyone will laugh because it was seen as a terrible car, but it was actually really, really good for what it was. And it was a Dacia Logan. And the thing is, I mean, it doesn't look great, but it does have a big boot, and it costs pennies to run. And we drove all over the country with it. And it was great. And I kind of miss it, even though I've got this newer car to replace it, which is far, far superior in pretty much every way. But when I was at the Renault garage last week getting my Clio serviced, and they had one in the showroom, but it wasn't just a very entry-level car. Ours was the Laureate, it didn't even have a sat-nav, actually. It didn't have air conditioning. That was about the only thing, I think, that was better than the other models. But
it had cruise control.
Well, it did, but then I think you can get cruise control on the entry-level Clio, to be fair. But it was something. But, you know, they do stick with you because the car really kind of, it actually drove quite well. It was quite fun to go around corners in. You know, I thought it was going to be terrible the first time I drove it on a test drive. But actually, it was quite good. In fact, that was with you, remember, at Company Car in Action. We drove one when Renault Dacia were there 1 year. I thought I really wanted to have a shot to see what it was like. And I didn't really make up my mind that it was a great car that day. But when I got one from the dealership after that, I was really quite impressed with it. And it is one of the cheapest cars, certainly on the UK market, to buy new and second hand. And it just cost pennies to run.
Yeah, I've never seen you actually be quite so sad to see a car go as that. Normally, you're very forward-looking. You're not somebody that looks back and sort of mopes about things at all. You just generally get on and look forward and positive. But with that car, you a couple of times said to me that you were kind of sad to see it go.
And, yeah.
I've never actually heard you say that about any of your other cars. Even like your first car, you're always keen to sort of get something else and move it on, you know. But with that one, yeah, you really were quite sorry to see it go.
Yes, it was kind of, I mean, it wasn't emotional, but it was, I think because it was just so good for what it was. And you know, when you get a car that just, you know, it's not trying to be anything it isn't. And I think it's because it's very refreshing because, you know, it's not trying to be upmarket or premium or SUV or anything like that. You know, it's just a very, very basic, cheap car. But it does, but it more than lives up to that. You know, I would say it pushes well above its station. And also, you know, when you have lots of, it's a family car, you take the family in it all over the country, you know, with the suitcases and everything. It you know, you have lots of good memories with it. And also we've had fun memories as well, going down to Company Car in Action and all sorts of events. So it's kind of, you know, and thinking, are we going to make it when we've got when the fuel light's on and when we still do another 50 miles, you know? So it did a pretty good job overall.
It was a very comfortable car. We did some serious mileage in that car and it was incredibly impressive. Yeah, I have to say. I mean, I always quite like cheapies. And as I said, the cars that I quite like are actually the cheaper cars I've had, like the Jimny and my Up, you know, these little runabouts that I've had. You know, they're the ones that actually I really like because ultimately it's about freedom. You put the badge on, the nice interior trims and the prestige and the image and, you know, what it means and the advertising. But ultimately, what I want is the freedom of the car. And almost the cheaper it is, the less I worry about it. The narrower they are, the more useful they are because you can get through little gaps and through the traffic or whatever. You can park them really easily. You're not worrying about them in supermarkets, people digging doors. So almost the cheaper and more basic it is, the more free it is because, you know, when I've had nicer cars, you park it at the edge of the car park and you walk 200 metres to the supermarket entrance. So what's the bloody point? Car's meant to be about freedom and it's meant to be useful in your life. And if you're not willing to use it, then there's no point. You've got to use it and enjoy it.
Exactly. It's funny how certain cars are. I remember my friends, they got themselves a Suzuki Swift, not Swift, it was the Ignis Sport. And at the time, it was incredibly cheap. It was like it was a pre-registered thing. And in Britain, it was about 9,000.
Was that the old style one?
Yes, this was going back probably about 10, 15 years. And it was only 9,995, which was an absolute bargain, really, because it was just so cheap. And again, when they sold that, they got like $6,000 for it about 2 or 3 years later, because it was such a big discount new. They couldn't believe how good it was, you know, and there was quite a lot of demand for them secondhand. But that was a fantastic car. So I'm just trying to check here on our listeners to see if they've sent us any emails. But and I'll keep you updated. Now, what would you say has been your best car then, John, that you've ever had?
Oh, without a doubt, the Golf, the one that I just sold to my sister. Actually, I genuinely think it's the best car I've ever had. It was a car I bought when I didn't have very much money at that point. I just had to do some work to my house. And I just wanted something a little bit better than the Suzuki Vitara that I had, which was it wasn't geared very well. So on long runs, it was sitting at about 5,000 RPM on the motorway. So I managed to get this Golf TDI automatic Mark 7. And it's just the most cleverly designed bit of car that I've ever owned. And again, I just really liked it. And I was very sorry to see that car go because so many things that you did with it and all the memories and stuff, you know, of the car. And it never let me down. It had some very intelligent technology on it. Did phenomenal miles per gallon. And that's actually what I liked about it.
Yeah. It's funny when you get a car that's just does everything the way that you want it. It's hard to kind of let it go sometimes, isn't it? That's the thing.
It is. But I have to say, I did have a Porsche Boxster, which was an excellent car. I have to say that car was phenomenal. It wasn't actually very expensive to run, particularly when I look at sort of the money I got back from it after having it for maybe 6 or 7 years, it really wasn't that much, you know, maybe £2,000 or £3,000 a year in depreciation. It really wasn't that expensive. It would do 35 miles per gallon, had phenomenal ride quality, and lots of space up front and lots of space in the back. Well, you know, only two seats, obviously, but lots of luggage space for the type of car. That was an excellent car. I'd put it as those two.
And what would you say was your worst car?
Ooh, well, there you go. The Suzuki Baleno that I had wasn't great. I mean, it wasn't so helped by the fact that it got written off on my first trip in it. The seat wouldn't adjust correctly. It wasn't the most grippy car in the world. It wasn't a great car. It was incredibly cheap, though. I'll give you that. I think it was only about 1,800 quid when it was only about 5 years old. So it was cheap as chips.
Now, you once got me a deal like that, wasn't it? Because that's a great thing when you're a new driver and you're just kind of starting out, and maybe your first few cars are, you know, they might get slightly more expensive. But you managed to get me a Proton. Remember the Proton Saloon? And it was only 3 years old, and it was a Motability car, which was the one that basically disabled people get, didn't they? And whoever had got this car in Motability, they had done something like 82,000 miles in it in 3 years. Yeah, and they must have smoked the whole time.
I know.
Because the car was completely black inside. And I had to take it to an extreme valeter to be able, like a professional valeter, to try and do it. And even he couldn't get all the smoke out of the roof lining and all that kind of stuff. But you got it for something like 1,100 quid at that time.
So
it was an incredible deal. You just did a negotiating for me. And we came back with that car. And it was quite a machine.
I like that car. Again, it was quite a very likeable car. It never went wrong, that car, did it? It was phenomenally reliable.
It was really good.
It was based on a Mitsubishi Lancer from the very early 80s. I think it was an Emirates. So it would have been a design that was probably 15, 16, 17 years old, something like that. But it was super reliable. It was their first model when they brought them over from Malaysia. And it had the first ones were all right. And then this one had that facelift, didn't it? It was one of the actual facelift cars. It was boxy as anything, but you know, it was kind of cool at the same time. You know, when everyone else was sort of starting to get prestige cars, you had your Proton.
I mean, that was, in all fairness, that car did last well. Very interesting issues was that you had to put a tire in the back of it and keep weight over the back wheels, because it was terrible for a lift-off oversteer. You come around the bend, and then if you're a bit too quick and you backed off, the car would simply oversteer. It would go into really quite ropey positions, which was fun. I remember going to the scrapyard and buying an old tire and wheel so I could put it in, and that gave me a lot better stability under cornering. And they always laugh when I said, "Why have you got an old tire in the back of your car?" Because that's what I needed it for. But it worked. It made it much, much better. And also, it used to leak water into the boot as well. That was another thing that was a problem with them.
Yes, yes, yeah, they did that. So eventually, it might have got a little bit of rust there, I suppose, on the boot. But I thought that would go. Why did you get rid of that one? What was the matter with that car?
I think I got another. I just bought another car. We bought a car at auction, I think, and I had a buyer for it. Somebody decided to buy it from me. And they had it for a week, and then the clutch blew. They run the clutch down within a week. And it wasn't slipping, that was the thing when I had it.
Of course it wasn't. Yeah. So the reason that you got rid of it was because the clutch was shot.
No, it was fine. I remember on the test drive they drove in, it was fine.
400 quid to replace the clutch, to be honest with you. Brilliant. This is the car deal advisor.
That was about 25 years ago.
Exactly.
But no, it was fine when I drove it, but the lady who bought it, they did tend to set the clutch, you know, they kind of revved it really high and then kind of slowly burned the clutch away.
It was fine when I had it.
Well, that must be...
You sold one to our friend Fraser, and the brakes went within about half a mile and he went the back of a BMW.
Now, I warned him. I said it did have servo brakes. And I said that...
I haven't changed the brakes pad since 1990.
Well, to be fair, that was an ex-hire car that was knackered when I got it. I was given it when my business finished, wasn't it, in the settlement.
Was that
the
van?
Yeah, that was the van, and it hadn't been serviced for years. I got it kind of serviced and checked over to make sure it was safe, and it got through a few, an MOT or two, Yeah, it was quite a machine. But because it had a horrendous misfire, so it wouldn't go that fast. It was a kind of struggle to get it over 50 or 60. Right. This was so annoying.
You did drive that vehicle down to Silverstone with a flat tire, which was incredible.
I did. I'll never forget that. When we arrived at your very upmarket Silverstone race day, race experience thing, wasn't it, for your license?
Yeah.
And they were looking out for me. And then I parked the car and I go out. I thought, great, I'm here. Everything's fine. And they even sent a welcome committee. And they said, hang on a minute, have you just driven on that with that tire? And I said, what tire? I wasn't even aware it was down. And I say, I've just come from Scotland, from Edinburgh. I mean, I've done about 400 miles. And they said, your tire.
I think you might have driven from Northampton, but you didn't Edinburgh.
And they measured the guy. He was from Porsche or something. When he had a Porsche pressure checker thing. And he had a big jacket on. It was a sponsored jacket. And he said, your tire is at 7 PSI. I said, you've driven all the way from Edinburgh with that. And I went, yeah, it was fine. You know. And the thing is, I was feeling motoring down as well.
7 PSI is better than nothing, isn't it? I mean, it's fine. But you wouldn't have had much weight in the back, I suppose. So
no, it was pretty much empty.
It'd be empty, wouldn't you? Really seats.
Yeah, so no, that was it. But I mean, that just shows you, isn't it? A kind of miracle drive when you're in your first car, you're kind of an old cheap car, isn't it? And it somehow gets you down there. But and then I parked behind your Porsche, and then I remember you raced away. They put some air in the tire, and then I had to follow you as you were heading back to the hotel. And I thought, there's no chance in this little Ford Fiesta van. remember they used to race around the side roads in the minibuses when they were taking you to different parts of the track. And that was always quite fun because they really used to go for it. It was quite a thing.
That's right, yeah. They used to try and... They were racing each other, weren't they? The racing structures would race each other in the transits. And you're like, oh, okay, it's your turn down at the skid pan now. And you're like, yeah, I think I might just put my helmet on.
Exactly, when you got in the transit van.
The speed that they were going. It was, they definitely were showing off a little bit. No doubt about it. But, I remember you drove down to Manchester all the way from Edinburgh to see me in your Citroën ZX.
That was
a great car. Again, I really liked, had superb ride quality.
Yeah, no brakes though. It was another car that had terrible brakes. They were just going to have really under brake for what you need.
I suppose. Well, I mean, you could maintain the brakes, or they just gone.
I think they just wanted that. Great. Because I remember my mate Simon, when he got married, he'd asked me to be his driver and to drive him and his wife to the hotel and then later on to the airport. And he had the GT model, you know, the kind of the hot hatch version.
The Volcan.
Yeah, the Volcan. And it didn't have ABS either. I remember Chris Coffey on Top Gear saying, my goodness, it's an absolute terrible death trap thing that Citroën won't put ABS brakes onto their top of the range model. But it had terrible brakes. I remember coming into a junction and braking, thinking I had enough time and I had to really brake hard and the thing locked up because it just wouldn't stop. It was really bad. The brakes were terrible on them. And when you consider
the wheels are locking, then presumably you've got enough braking action to lock the wheels. It just had no feel or something.
Yeah, no, very little feel, and just didn't do anything. You know, I mean, it's like some cars now. They've got massive discs on them. So, and obviously, probably wider profile tires as well. So they get, you know, they do get a lot more grip with the road, especially in dry conditions. But in the old days with the Citroën, you just didn't get anything. I mean, it was really bad, and also that car wasn't good in the snow. But it was kind of the steering was, there wasn't a lot of feel to it. You know, it was quite light, but it didn't have a lot of feel. And that made it quite difficult to drive in the snow. For other cars that just were a wee bit heavier, just, you know, like even my Fiesta was better. And the Volkswagen, Volkswagen Polo, although it was a terrible car in every other condition, it was actually quite good in the snow because it had tiny tires. You know, it was just literally, they were so thin, you got grip. So it was quite good. I remember having quite a bit of fun in the snow in that car. Other than that, it was terrible. But that was the thing.
I remember you stayed in fourth gear too long; it would never come out.
Yeah, because you'd get stuck in it, you know.
But then I remember driving it quite fast once into the local town. It was vaguely amusing, but it just would not come out of fourth gear. It just stayed in there.
You had to virtually double the clutch, didn't you, to try and get it in? You know, back in the next gear. It was just knackered. But talking of cars that are quite good, I mean, now you're spoiled for choice. If you're buying a new car, let's say your first car, I mean, there's so many great machines, you know, got proper brakes, they're reliable, everything kind of, you know, you get what you need, you get all the technology with them. But things like the Hyundai i10, I mean, they're fantastic cars to drive. I mean, although I found the one that we had for a wee while was a little bit uncomfortable in terms of driving position, the brakes were phenomenal. I mean, you could go in insane speeds before a corner and brake, and it felt like it was going to just stop you in slow motion, you know. It was incredibly adjustable and felt really secure, but it also, you know, you could turn it in really well, great steering. And you drove the i10, and I think you quite liked it as well.
Yeah, it's a great car. I just love the little cars. I mean, I really quite like my little VW Up. It's much the same. They're so light, you can just throw them around. And okay, I mean, it hasn't got the chassis balance of, you know, some of the more expensive cars, but because they're light and they're really pointy and actually really quite well engineered, they're just phenomenally good fun. And it is down to the weight, and also they're so narrow that you can place them very easily on the road, and that makes them much more fun, because you can also, you're driving the car, because we've got like to push on a bit sometimes with the cars, and you can drive them towards the limit, and you're not actually going that fast.
No, that's the thing. It's nice to be able to have a car that just drives really well and reacts to your kind of input straight away and handles well, and you know, and because there's nothing worse than having steering that's slow and wallowy, and you know, and it just doesn't want to turn into a corner. It's never a nice thing. But with these new small cars, especially the Hyundai i10, it's a great machine. I had a lot of fun with that, actually. A good peppy engine, you know, it felt a lot quicker than it actually was. But I have to say, from having a Renault Clio, they do handle well. I think I can see why people like them, because they are a lot of fun to drive, and they're relatively cheap to run, which is quite good.
Yeah, I haven't driven the Clio for years. I've never driven your Clio, I don't think.
Yeah,
I haven't really done any. I'm not even sure we've even been in it with you, actually, that car. We've been in your Picasso, but I'm not sure I've ever been in the Clio.
Ah, that's true. Yeah, no, that's a it's a good car, certainly, and I mean it doesn't, the body roll is limited and it does drive well. Now, to all our listeners, of course, you're listening to the Car Sim and Race Driver Show. Remember, you can email us. Send us an email at podcast@cardealadvisor.co.uk. I'm online here and I'm checking the email just now. And the first person to send us an email will, of course, get a shout out on the show. It'd be fantastic. Let us know, what was your first car? Was it good? Was it terrible? What was the thing that you liked most about it? It would be fantastic to hear from you. So it's podcast@cardealadvisor.co.uk. And we will read out your messages as they come in. Well, John, we've done kind of small cars and first cars. What would you say if you were on the market today for like a first car? What kind of thing would you recommend? Because you've a huge range of cars. What do you think would be a great first car today?
Well, I mean, fewer and fewer people drive these days. That's the amazing thing. But I think the way that cars are financed has completely changed the market, because back in our day, it was typically, there was no finance available. I mean, particularly if you were only sort of 17 or 18 years old, you had no credit history because you couldn't even get a credit card until you were 18. However, obviously, most people buying their first car were 17. So finance wasn't an option. In fact, I'm not even sure today whether you can get finance at 17. I'm not even sure about that. I think there are manufacturers that do it, actually.
Yeah, maybe it's Peugeot, etc.
Exactly. So they're getting people into really quite decent cars at such a young age, and that typically wasn't available sort of in the 90s, you know, when we were coming through. So it really depends what people want to spend a month. But there's a huge amount on the market, even for sort of around about £100 a month, you can get some really good new cars. And if you can go to £150 a month, then kind of you can get almost whatever you want within reason. The limiting factor is insurance.
Yeah, that's it. Because that can be like £1,500 or £2,000, even for a pretty basic car, isn't it? And it's usually more money than what the car costs.
Yeah.
And so it's it's still quite high for the first few years, but then it starts to come down a bit after that. I remember my first car cost £500, and to get third-party insurance, because that's all I could afford, was £400. for the Fiesta. But then after, amazingly, I've had a no-claims bonus ever since, which a lot of people would wonder if that's possibly true, but it is. It's quite a thing. But no, so insurance can be. What would you say would be the worst new car that you could buy today? Certainly from the UK point of view. There are a few clunkers out there that, even though they're brand new, they're still pretty terrible.
Well, technically they're all pretty good. But, you know, so much car now, you know, underneath so many cars are all just the same or very, very similar in their layout. You know, vast majority of cars are front-wheel drive with a transverse engine. And all the equipment tends to be the same. But it's just kind of dull cars, really. Cars that are a little bit, maybe just trying too hard or trying to be something they're not. I really just don't like these SUV kind of coupes. I just don't like them at all. So stuff like the BMW X4, I just can't be done with that. You know, it's, if you want a sports car, get a sports car. If you want a 4x4, get a 4x4. But, you know, these kind of crossover things are just horrible things. Don't like them at all.
Yeah, things like the Mokka, Vauxhall Mokka, and things like that, they're pretty terrible.
Ooh, yeah, not so good. Not
Ford good, EcoSport.
Me, not good.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
Exactly. It's just, no.
Even better, Peugeot Rifter. It's
now,
one of the most.
Van thing?
Yeah, that's the kind of bad. Well, the one that's worse is the Vauxhall version. Now they've called it something even more uninspiring.
It's a really insipid name, isn't it?
It's like the
Vauxhall
Boulevard or something, or some kind of they call it. It's really bad.
I can't remember what it's called. Yeah, it's a terrible thing, isn't it?
I know we can take it to the extremes.
We've forgotten the name of it.
I mean, a Peugeot Rifter, it just sounds terrible. It sounds like Drifter, doesn't it? That's one step away from the homeless kind of group, you know.
Yeah,
but,
it does, doesn't it?
It's not.
It just sounds like a kind of homeless guy under a bridge or something.
I'll live in an old one, you know. In an old barn find that he's found.
I don't think they'll be putting any of those through Sotheby's auction in 50 years' time. This is an amazing car called the Peugeot Rifter. And this is its Vauxhall equivalent, which is, we don't even know what it was called because it was forgotten as soon as it was introduced. I'll have a little look. Was it a compact? What is it? I mean, what would you even call it? There's so many different categories.
It's kind of like a kind of people carrier, isn't it? It's a kind of a large family car because it has the bench seat in the middle, and some of them have, I don't know if they've got seven seats, maybe. They might have a third row of seats in some of them because a lot of them are used for taxis, isn't it, for private hire. So you tend to get that. But
I've never noticed one. I mean, presumably they are out there, but I just haven't noticed one at all.
No, that's quite a. They are appallingly. And always in dull, kind of dull grey colours or kind of old burgundy red, you know, with wheely wheel trims. And they just look wrong. And, you know, like the vans actually look better. The vans that they're actually based on, like the Berlingo and things like that, are much, much better. I'm trying to think of the Citroën version or Citroën Berlingo, and then it's the Peugeot.
Yeah, that is the Citroën. You know,
yeah. So I mean, that they look far, far better than the other ones, you know. But it's obviously just based on that, and they've put some windows in. But they're like $25,000 list price. Now you can get some for about $20,000 for the top of the range. But even the basic ones are about $16,000 or $17,000 after a discount. It's a lot of money for what is pretty awful. I mean, in that respect, you're so much better. Just go for a Dacia. It's far better. You know, you could get a top-of-the-range duster for $17,000, and it's got everything, you know, and it's so much nicer and probably will hold its value a bit better. That would be the four-wheel drive as well with a diesel engine.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you'd be getting the Vauxhall Combo Life, that's what it's called. I mean, it's got seven seats, has it? I mean,
I think some of them do.
Why would you want that?
Right. But I suppose if you've got a family, it's handy. But just for our new listeners, we are talking about our first car experiences, whether they were old cars or whether it's a brand new car that you got when you got your license and you're able to experience freedom of the road for the first time. What was your car? Now, we've been talking about European cars, but for all our American audience as well, let us know what kind of car you've had. Did you love it? Did you hate it? What was your experience? Send us an email at podcast@carneoadvisor.co.uk and we'll read out your comments. In fact, I will do a quick check right now just to see if there's anything new coming through. But so far, nope, it's still the same. So send us an email and tell us what you think. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing what cars are out there. I mean, I know that some people used to try and get an old, but in the really old days, they would try and find an old Porsche, you know, like the old 944s. Because you could get those for next to nothing. And they were kind of quite exciting. But imagine what you could get in America. Because, I mean, our cars are just so dull, you know, compared to what folk get in America. Like, when you look at the kind of coupes and the like Chevrolet, the Camaros and Ford Mustangs and all of these cars, because they tend to go on for years and years and get passed through families as well, don't they? So, you know, people tend to, you know, it was more likely you'd get a kind of more sporty car. Now, I know that in the 80s and 90s, like Mustangs weren't that exciting to look at, but there were still some things like the Trans Am. Remember, like with Knight Rider, and what was the one with Burt Reynolds? Cannonball Run.
Yeah, they were completely iconic, you know. And they weren't that expensive. I mean, I'm not absolutely sure, but I got the impression that there weren't really a lot more than the equivalent saloon car. So, you know, you might, if your Ford Taurus was $15,000. You could probably get a Mustang for 18, you know. So it wasn't, you know, completely, you know, different. And back in Europe, I remember there used to be some quite good deals on coupes. You know, you used to be able to get like Honda Civic made a coupe, and there was remember the Hyundai coupe? They did one
for a while,
which is quite an attractive, really popular car.
Yeah, they were quite good.
Ford Puma, and then there was the Vauxhall Tigra. These are all quite fun cars that, you know, just looked a bit different. And I just don't see I can't even think of anything like that. A car for maybe £15,000, £16,000, £17,000, which looks really, really cool. I can't think of one. Yes, but it's all SUVs now, isn't it? You've got those sort of T-Rocks and things like that. But people surely still want a little coupe.
Well, of course, they've just brought out that new Ford Puma, which, you know, the old Puma was a fantastic car. I mean, highly rated. But the new one is an SUV. It's like a kind of Fiesta Active type thing, slightly bigger than that. But it's supposed to drive quite well. But, you know, it's just, you know, come on. We need some more sporty little cars to add a bit of fun and zest to people's lives. They're fed up with stuff that's rubbish, you know.
They don't actually have to be that, actually got to be that fast. But, you know, the Ford Puma was just enormously good fun. And under the bodywork was a Fiesta. So servicing was quite cheap, brakes were quite cheap, tyres weren't too expensive. The interior was largely from a Fiesta as well. So it was all pretty rugged, well-tested stuff. But it just looked really cool. Where's it all gone?
Yeah, well, see, everyone's got into SUVs. Maybe that's why people are so miserable now, because they hate driving, because these cars have put them off driving. And, you know, unless you buy a hot hatch or something like a, you know, a Renault Megane RS or something quite fun, or a Fiesta ST, you know, it's people are bored and they want something that's going to give them a bit of a thrill. But all these cars are just not that great. I mean, I'm trying to think, although there are some exceptions, like things like the Suzuki Swift Sport. I mean, that's still quite cheap today, and there's lots of the old models for next to nothing. So that can be really, really good.
Is there a fire alarm going off somewhere?
No, it's just my phone. I don't know why that's going in the background there. But I'll try and make sure that it doesn't come on, but it might well phone again. That's what happens when you do a live show in your office and you don't turn your phone off. I'm not sure how to turn this one off. That's my landline. But there it's going again. I don't know. It might just ring out. I'll try and put it on. There, just give me a few seconds. But it sounds like an office. It sounds like a busy office. But I can assure you, it's not somebody phoning in.
It might be a caller for Car Dealer Advisor. Might be wanting to place an order for a new McLaren 720S.
Well, that would be the thing. That would be a proper first car. But not on that one, isn't it?
That'd be excellent. But, I mean, why can't a manufacturer take... I mean, because cars are generally, you've just been saying, they're generally pretty good. But I can't get very excited about any of them. I mean, they all look the same. You know, the fact is that what the cars do we like best? And yours is a Dacia Logan, and mine's a VW Up. I mean, what's going on? Why, if someone could make a car based on the current Fiesta, which drives really well, so like an ST platform, maybe not even as fast as the ST, but a pretty little coupe body shell on it, you could maybe produce a relatively cheap paddle shift gearbox, maybe just a sort of 7-speed gearbox, and sell them for £20,000. I reckon they'd fly out the door, but nobody's doing it.
Yeah, it shows that we must be going through a midlife crisis to like the cars that we like. You know, something pretty
desperate. I'm not even saying I want one. I just can't understand why kids these days, sort of 18, 19, 20, they don't seem to want exciting cars. I mean, when we were that age, we would want to have something which we could get sideways on a roundabout. You know, whereas now what we want is... Or would look good, or preferably both. So, you know, I used to pine after like an old BMW 325i or something, you know, a straight six, some old thing that you could just tear around the place in, you know. It didn't have to be tidy, but nowadays people just want something new for $149.99 a month with Apple CarPlay and ability to take selfies. You know, I mean, that's honestly, it's what's gone on.
It does remind me, I have to say, of when Top Gear did the Peugeot thing, you know, when they talked about what Peugeot were like and how they, on their bad years, and when they did an advert, a kind of fake advert for a Peugeot 306 or something, or whatever it was, or 307 or 308 or something, and it said basically four wheels and an engine for £100 a month, you know, like this, and it's got,
that's
you
it.
Know, and, it was, and that's all
well,
it
that
was.
That seems to be what, that's what kids seem to want these days, is that, and I don't understand it. I don't. Can you think of any examples? I don't know that many.
I can actually think of an American example that just at the financial crash, Chrysler was so desperate to sell cars that I remember reading this. I think it was in Car Magazine that they would give you a brand new Chrysler PT Cruiser with no deposit. Or I think it was or maybe like $100 down, and it was $100 a month. And then you owned it after 5 years. It was some of those, or it was an option to buy it, virtually nothing. You know, you paid a few hundred dollars to basically clear it. I mean, it was like $6,000 or $7,000 at very most. They must have been on some kind of contract hire or some kind of deal. But they were so desperate to shift cars. I mean, they were just giving them away. Whether you'd actually want to pay $100 for a PT Cruiser is another matter. But it was certainly. they were not a great car. They were pretty terrible.
I think the clue there perhaps is in the PT Cruiser side of it. Yeah. The £100 and $100 a month side of the story. Mind you, kind of a certain number of people, that was a popular car, wasn't it?
They were really popular in Glasgow.
Different.
Glasgow loved the PT Cruiser convertible. I don't know what that says about my fellow Scots, but, you know, because it was a shocker, an absolute shocker of a car. And build quality was bad, reliability was bad, it didn't handle very well. And it looked, I mean, yes, it might have been all right in the first few months, but it aged so badly. It just didn't, I mean, it really looked terrible. I saw one about 2 months ago. I thought, I've not seen one of those for years. So they must have just scrapped them, you know, because they were so popular and then they just disappeared off the road.
They did. You didn't really see older ones. They were there and then they were all gone.
Aye.
No, they weren't to be anything in between.
Yeah,
they're quite a machine, the PT Cruiser, that's for sure.
But I remember when there were cars, there were things like the old Alphas, like in the '90s. You had the 146. They were cheap cars, secondhand. They were. I always thought that would have been a nice car to have a 146. And then it was the 156.
Yeah, you really wanted one. Did you not have one of those for a while?
I wanted one.
The Fiat Tempra you had.
Yeah, that was a courtesy car that parents had.
Yeah.
But then there were things like that. I'm trying to think what else did we have. The 145. There were some really cheap 145s. I'm still tempted. Yeah. I had a little bit of cash free. I thought, you know what? If I could buy a third car just for a laugh, I'd have to get a 145.
They were cool looking cars, weren't they?
Yeah.
They were good.
And the kind of thing, you know, they were kind of ahead of their time. And, you know, they, as usual, Fiat Alfa Romeo were terrible at advertising them. So they really didn't sell anywhere near what they could have done. But they were a bargain for what they were. And they were quite good to drive. You know, they were quite fun. And it's like things like the Tipo Sirizza Valvole, you know, the 16 valve. They were great cars. I mean, I think they actually won a hot hatch test in Car Magazine one time. They were that.
They were good. And actually, they did sell a few of those. There were a few of those around.
Yeah.
But Alfa really didn't. I mean, that, they were the years of Alfa in the kind of early 90s when they were like selling 150 cars a year or something. I mean, it was absolutely, the numbers were crazy. You think, how can they possibly justify right-hand drive production for so few cars?
Yeah. No, it was something else.
But where are the characters now? Where are the characterful cars? I just don't see them. I mean, I used to get so excited about, you know, I remember loving the 145. That was a great car. It was amazing. And you used to get very excited about different car designs. And now they all just kind of look the same. Or maybe it's just the changing nature of driving. You know, the roads are much, much busier. People want technology. They want safety. There's so many speed cameras around now, and everything's got stability control. You know, whereas when we were coming through, growing up, it was all about performance and look.
Yeah.
What kind of noise the car would make? I'm just going to change headsets, so that maybe may not speak to you again.
All right. <It'll work. laughs> You need to charge that one, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I can still hear you. I can still hear you now. Now, will it work? Because this was a problem we had earlier on. If it goes blank, we're in trouble.
Coming back,
but I can hear something.
Coming on to my other one. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you. It's still working. That's good. You've done a pit stop.
There you go.
Oh.
So I've got my new AirPods.
That was a crackle and a crunch. All right, excellent. Yep, so they are working.
The old AirPods, they are working. Yeah, so put the old AirPods back in their case. And I got my new AirPods Pro. So they are tremendously exciting AirPods as AirPods go. So there you go.
Back to the old cars. Now, there were also things like the Fiat Coupe. Do you remember the Fiat Coupe? They were a great car. They were quite expensive, to be fair. They were about 15 grand back in 1995 or thereabouts when they had them. And then the turbo was about 20 grand. I always remember that was about 18 to 20. Because I remember my father drove one of those. We had this incredible running duns. They had this Fiat open day in the garage, and they had all the Fiats and the Alfa Romeos. It was right opposite the police station. And they had a test drive night. I remember it was a Thursday night. I don't think you could make it. I think I'd hoped you would be able to come, but you weren't able to make it. And they opened it all up, and there were loads of people about. And I remember my father, he wanted to have a go in this Fiat Coupe Turbo. And I wanted to have a go in it as well. So I came along, he said, you can drive, I'll go as a passenger. And we raced out. Mm-hmm. And they actually, would you believe it, the police were waiting. Literally at the 30 mile an hour limit. They were waiting for people to race past so they could try and do them on the way back. But once we'd gone past it, we had some great fun out on the roads round and about. But, you know, they were cars with these great kind of Maranello red colours, you know, and it was a Fiat Coupe. It looked like a Ferrari. I mean, that brought more and more customers into Fiat than just about anything else. And I know they've got the Spider, the R-Bar Spider. So in a way, they're kind of catching it, but they're hardly selling many cars. I mean, I know they do the R-Bar.
Well, they've just got rid of that, haven't they?
Fiat got rid of the Spider. I think they've got the normal one. I don't know if they've still. I thought they were still making the R-Bath. Maybe you're right. But I know that the old.
You could be right. Maybe the Fiat one's gone, but they kept the R-Bath one. But I don't know. I remember lusting after the Fiat Coupe. I mean, it was just so kind of wild looking. Those big slashes above the wheels, and because Chris Bandel designed it, didn't he? Before he went to BMW and destroyed their designs. But it had that incredible interior, which I thought was so attractive, with the exterior colour running through the interior. And I'd never seen that before in sort of 1993 or 1994. It was just kind of so different. And it was so characterful and so fast. That 20-valve.
The five-cylinder. 20-valve
turbo.
That was brilliant.
It did a 60 in sort of 6 seconds or something, which, you know, back in the day, it was incredibly fast.
Yeah, and it sounded good. It sounded lovely. You know, like the Volvos and the Audis, they had five-cylinder engines as well, but it really gave you...
Yes.
I mean, that was the ultimate car. But when I was at one of the old classic car shows this year, it was they had a whole bunch of Fiat 500s. head off your the Fiat Capis, and they still look good today. I mean, you still kind of think, oh, I would quite like that. You know, they're still a lot of fun. And now they want about $4,000 or $5,000 for a good one. I think they're a bit cheaper if you get a really bad one, of which there are probably many.
probably most of them. Yeah.
But again,
a very characterful car, and I it was a little bit more than maybe the equivalent sort of Tipo and things. It was more, no doubt about it, but it wasn't that much more. The base one was what, 15,999 or something.
Yeah.
At that time, a kind of top of the range Tipo was probably 13,14. Yeah. So
yeah,
so just a bit more, you get this amazing looking car.
No.
There was all sorts of things out there, and they were just priced about the same as a kind of regular car. And now it's all about SUVs, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just really dull. It just doesn't grab you at all. The small coupe has disappeared off the market just about. It's hardly anything.
It's a shame.
At the time, there was the Nissan 200 SX. That was about the same time as well. And that was 2 litres. It was quite fast. And it looked really cool. And they weren't that expensive. Again, I think it was less than 20 grand. You could get certainly pre-reg stuff for sort of 17, 18. It was a 2 litre rear-wheel drive turbocharged hatchback, and just great fun.
Yeah. No, and that's what we need. We need cars that are fun. See, now this is the thing. I think people are so bored of those cars that they're just playing games. I mean, you know, I'm probably one of them in terms of, you know, I do a lot of sim racing just for fun and on things like Gran Turismo Sport. But ultimately, that kind of gives you your driving thrill, because it's, you know, you don't really get that anywhere now on the road. Or if you do, you're going to be pretty well off to get a decent car to be able to do such a thing, you know, or have a bit more fun while driving your everyday transport. But I think people are just, it's easier now to buy a game at 50 quid, put it on your PlayStation, and then pretend you're driving in some amazing roads in some amazing car, rather than actually be able to buy one. Because otherwise, that you look at it, and hey, out on the driveway is sitting as a Vauxhall Mocha, and you think, this kill me now, you know.
Life is over. Yeah, exactly.
I think, what was the Clarkson quote? Carry on.
No. I was just thinking back to the Toyota GT86. Maybe we should give Toyota a bit of a nod there.
That's
true. Car is not that expensive. That's like 22 grand, 6-speed gearbox, you know, really handles well, rear-wheel drive. So, yeah. I did forget about that one, but I do think the Toyota, fair pay to Toyota for that then, and the Subaru equivalent.
I would say, actually, that's probably the best car in Toyota's lineup. Certainly the most interesting. Yeah. I'm not so keen on all their other hybrids and all that other stuff. They look all right, but when you drive them, they feel quite heavy and not that nice. You know, I think compared to other stuff, I was never massively keen on them. That brings us on to a car similar, the Mazda MX-5, of course, because there were some really cheap deals on them. Surprisingly cheap deals, actually. That could be the bargain, certainly on the UK market, for about $15,995. For a pre-reg Mazda MX-5 convertible.
Yeah, I mean, that's really good. Well, maybe the demand just isn't there, Hugh. Maybe the youngsters today just don't want these cars. Maybe that's just why they don't build them, because no one wants them.
Yeah.
Because, I would have thought, you know, if you could, there's plenty of GT86s out there, pretty much pre-reg stuff, for about 22 grand. So, that's a great car. Absolutely great car for the kind of money that you'd pay for a VW top end Polo or something, you know. So I mean, they are there, and that's I think if I was looking for a car, you know, when I was 17, 18, that's what I'd be looking for. I'd be looking for something like a GT86.
Aye, and that's the thing, it's, you know, because you want it needs something with a bit of fun, and there's plenty around second hand. So if you're about to get your license, or perhaps you've had it for a year or two and you'd like to get something a bit more exciting, yeah, we definitely recommend things like the MX-5, because it's rear-wheel drive as well, and also the Toyota GT86 and the Subaru BRZ, because it's going to be give you a lot more street cred.
Yeah.
Test out your ability to catch a slide if you're on a wet road. They are a wee bit ropey, so you need to be prepared for the car to want to turn, or what do they say? Martin Brundle always says the back end wants to overtake the front. Or you're going straight to the scene of the accident. So they're certainly quite.
I had a test drive of a GT86 at the Toyota in Edinburgh, And I think the guy, all he was used to doing was taking myrtle out in the in a little Yaris.
Yaris, or a Prius or something.
And I got in a GT86, and it was kind of where was the toilet? We ended up kind of road squatting at the airport at Edinburgh. That's right.
We cut
through, and there's a couple of roundabouts by Heriot Watt University. And I just turned the traction control off, and I was just sliding this car around these roundabouts. And the salesman, he'd never seen a car slid before, ever. He's never seen anyone do oversteer. He said, "Oh, you've lost control." I said, "No, it's just sliding out of the roundabout." "Oh, don't do that. Don't do that." He just couldn't handle the fact the car was moving around underneath him.
That's not used to it.
Extraordinary. But it was a good car, I have to say. I'd have one of those, actually. I definitely have a GT86.
Yeah, they are good. I remember in the car that I bought from you, that wonderful 540 with the 4.5 litre V8 engine. And one of my bosses thought she was quite impressed with that car, actually. And they all wanted me to take them to lunch, but take my car. And there was these roundabouts near Hermiston Gate at the time. And they wanted me to do my best to get the car sliding. And I had to go around there faster and faster to try and get the car to slide. But we did eventually. We managed to do it. But then not long after that, I got fired. So it was...
I was talking about a story until the end.
So I think I must have scared them too much. First to go in the cutbacks.
Exactly. Some good stories there, that's for sure. Do you listen to, we shouldn't advertise other podcasts, but Chris
Harris. Well, we're going to rush out to be fair.
Chris Harris's podcast is really good.
I haven't actually, I'll need to look at that.
It's very good. It's not as good as ours, obviously, but it's it is good. To be fair, he probably gets more famous guests on than you manage with me. No one knows who I am. But he gets like Tiff Nadell on, and they were talking about the old Top Gear days how he used to be a bit of a hooligan. And it's really good. Maybe put a link in your stream or on your website or something towards it. Because he's talking about doing some demo runs around the Nordschleife. And he had some journalist in, and he was going for it. And he says he just nearly lost this, whatever it was. It was a McLaren or something. But the person next to him had no idea because he'd been sort of driving quite fast. But he said he was just absolutely almost threw it away at about 140,000.
That's sweet.
Clapped it all back up again. Yeah. So it might just be that was the reason you were fired, Hugh.
The thing is, they asked me to do it, though, didn't they? Maybe they didn't think I would. Yeah. Or we were going round the roundabout at quite some speed, and it was loud. That car was quite loud when you put it in sport mode and kicked down. Yeah. It was a proper broadslide. I mean, you could hear the screeching and the tyre smoke coming off that. I was amazed there was no police actually around there, to be fair. It was at broad daylight at lunchtime. so it was. Yeah. I mean, have gone round there about 4 or 5 times. But
a limited slip diff, that car. It didn't have a limited slip diff, so you had to unload the back slightly. But if you could unload the back slightly, then it would drift very nicely for you. Yeah. If you just in a roundabout accelerating, it just tended to spin the inside wheel, so you did need to move the balance of the car slightly towards the front. But the engine was phenomenal. That 4.4 litre V8 has got to be one of the best engines BMW made. It was absolutely incredible engine.
Yeah. Well, I used to laugh because people used to say, it's a huge engine, must cost you a fortune to drive it to work. And it was only like about 7 or 8 miles that it was for my commute. And it took me about 20 minutes. It did 8 miles to the gallon when I was commuting. I said they were 8 amazing miles.
Yeah, well, you get your money's worth out of it, absolutely. 8 miles to gallon. Is that all you got?
That's when I was really hoofing it around on the commute. It would usually do a good bit more than that in the most part. But if I was angry and I was trying to get around on my commute, I would just absolutely go crazy. Then it did 8 miles to the gallon. But the thing is, when people throw.
I remember you telling me that it had 3 modes: eco, normal, and commute mode. When you want the most aggressive throttle map, You want the quickest shifting gearboxes. Yeah, the thermal suspension setup. It's silly mode, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's something.
Excellent.
It is brilliant. Well, look, on that note, we've been going, would you believe it, for well over an hour. And I think what I'll do is I will give you a quick call using something else in a few minutes' time once I've finished the stream here. And we can have a quick chat. But thank you to all our listeners. You've been listening to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show with me, Hugh Hattrick, and my very special guest, Jonathan Sutherland. We'll see you very soon. Take care. And remember our motto, drive fast and try not to crash.